Welcome back, everybody. It's good to be back. It's fantastic to be back. I hope you guys had a fantastic Halloween, but now it's getting to the winter month, isn't it?
What fun.
I can't wait to go to Walmart and pick up my Santa statue. It's crazy to me that the entire concept of Santa, or at least his color scheme, was completely modified and changed in the course of history because of a company. Because of Coca-Cola. Out of all the companies, Coca-Cola. Why couldn't it be something cooler, you know? Why couldn't it have been like Toyota or something, you know? Like, imagine Toyota was the one who just completely altered our conception of that jolly old red fat man, you know? Why couldn't it have been like Nintendo? I don't think Nintendo's a good one. Or any video game company for that matter. To be fair, gifts are just microtransactions in a different light. Anyway, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. It's good to be back. I am thrilled to explain to you today's theme, because it's not a video game. If you guessed from the actual thing I showed you, the opening song. For recording listeners, that's not you. Listen live, and you'll be able to hear all the tunes, of course. Today, we'll be going over one of my favorite bands. Oh, how delectable. One of my favorite bands. None other than King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Now, first of all, why the name? It was actually just an argument between Gizzard and I think another thing. They wanted, like, King Wizard or something like that, and they just combined both names. But they've been running for a solid, say, since 2010. They are an Australian band that comprises of 7 different members. I'm not going to rattle them off because you don't care. What you do care about is what I have to say about them. Now, when we're talking about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, so most people are asking me, like, oh yeah, what genre is it? What? And I have to say, all I can say is yes, and then the conversation immediately screeches to a halt. I don't get to explain myself. I never get to explain myself, and they're like, oh, that's cool. And then that's it. What am I supposed to do? Lie? I think not. And here, I'm gonna explain to you. I'm gonna explain to you why no one I know, except for the people who suggested it to me, are into King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. The thing about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is that they're broad in every genre, in every sense of the word. They cover almost everything, right? You don't, like, their main homestead, obviously, is psychedelic rock and progressive rock, right? That nice mid-60s, late-60s kind of niche that combines the concept album and is just off the tail end of the psychedelic hippie era, right? But they do so much more than that. And then some of the people, I suggest that to them, and they're like, oh yeah, listen to this one. And they're like, I don't like that one. Try any other album, and I'm confident you'll at least have a different opinion about it, right? Like, for example, you take their main classic hit, Nonagon Infinity, right? That's their main homestead. That's where they got big, and that's why they're still with us today. Compare that to another album, right? Say, for example, right off the top, any other album, literally any other album, Butterfly 3000, for example. Completely different vibes. For the former one, Nonagon Infinity, that one's completely just twangy, like, metal rock, compressed to hell, wall of sound style recording process, right? That was a slew of words. I'm sorry for anyone who doesn't know what those words mean. Basically, it's just a very aggressive album that also has a lot of psychedelic elements. So you got the metal, the heavy guitar, but also you have, like, little wah-wah synths and all that kind of stuff. Butterfly 3000 is completely comprised of synths, and it feels like you're floating on a cloud. It just does, and it's nice to go to sleep to. But that's not what we're going to talk about right now. But here's the thing, right? I'm going to go into a little side tangent here because it just pisses me off, right? Supposedly, there is one album from this list that we will get to eventually that the people, the King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard said was public domain. It's public domain, which means it should be able to, you can put it in anything you want, and you'll be able to get the money off of it, all that good stuff, right? We don't get money from this. This is a radio show, and it's a non-profit radio show, which means that we don't get any money, because it's all on the website, and you just listen to it. There's no Patreon for LaurierRadioStation.com. That's not the URL. But for some reason, I've been researching this to no end, and I still don't have a clue why ATO, the government officials for the specific album that makes it public domain, has copyright struck different YouTube videos that have this album in it. It pisses me off, because obviously King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard doesn't know about it, and this album has been released for 7 years, 8 years actually. So what they're telling me is that the government is bad. Do with that what you will, listener. But anyway, I thought it would be a fantastic idea to go through each album. Obviously, we're not going to listen to every album because we only have 1 hour. We have 25 albums to go through. Their discography. You will see. You'll see their madness, all right? But for now, let's go through every single song in chronological order, and I'll give a little blurb about it as we go along. Now, of course, this is going to get a little heated, because I love this band. Ooh, sorry about that. But I hope you'll be able to follow along, because it's just something I wanted to do for a while, you know? It's been something I'm itching towards. Like, the video game stuff is alright, but this is the real Homestead. So, starting off, we have their first fully released album, 12 Bar Bruise. Like, that's, it's an alright album, because it's the start of their kind of, it's the tail end of their punk phase and getting into the more psychedelic phase. It's interesting, because they use a lot of garage band techniques. Their producer, the production on this is absolutely terrible. Don't get me wrong. The audio peaks way too many times. But it's kind of the Homestead of, oh yeah, do it yourself. You can do whatever you want with it. Right? It's a neat little album, but that's all I can really say about it. 12 Bar Bruise. Eh. It's alright. Next up, we got, now correct me if I'm wrong here, we got Head on Pill. Float Along, Fill Your Lungs. That's what it's called, right? This is their first dive into the psychedelic genre. The first song is 16 minutes. It's the first Homestead of their psychedelic genre, all right? This is the quintessential, right? This is the turning point. I would love to play a little bit for you, but these songs are way too long. So we'll just move on. Listen to it if you want. Float Along, Fill Your Lungs. Lovely song if you just want to chill. Maybe do, I don't know, anything. It just like vibe, really. I don't know. Next one is a bit of an interesting one. Eyes Like the Sky is more so of a audiobook. Weird, isn't it? It's literally just an audiobook with a backing track. It's not actually anything else. I don't mind that. It's completely fine to me. But like, is it a song? Is it an album? I don't know. Either way, the story follows along of it's a Western, basically. It follows along the Aboriginal traditions and all that kind of stuff. It's a neat listen to if you want to just, like, listen to an audiobook. But, like, Any for the actual like song? I don't know about that one. It's just meh to me. Ottomans. Now this is like the leftovers. There's a lot of these kind of albums. They just pick like a few of the songs that they just have left over. Because that's their kind of production style, right? They just go. They just go into the paint. They just jam as much as they can. They find some like neat little morsels of musical talent and little building blocks, basically. And if nothing fits, they make a little album, like Oddments, where they just take all the extra little bits, like in a meat compactor, and they just throw it in there, like a sausage. I don't like these albums. They're probably the worst albums, in my opinion. You can listen to them if you want. There are a few good songs, but they're not connected in any way, and that's why they're kind of like, meh to me, you know? They're not coherent. I like an album that has, like, a whole, like, a theme to it, you know? Oddments is too all over the place. Next up, we got... Oh, this is where it starts to actually get interesting. Because I'm In Your Mind Fuzz is the first album that completely defines what they are doing. They aren't a psych band. They are a concept band. And I love that so much. I'm actually going to play the first part of the album because it's just so good. The bass is so good. I can't get the bass out of my head. It's been stuck there since I've listened to this. It's been a year. So I'm gonna spread the worm to you and please don't hum along or it's gonna get into your mind. All right, ladies and gentlemen. You just feel the oozing energy from that transition down to, like, the... Oh, it's beautiful. But listen to the entire album for yourself. One thing you can make as a mistake of listening to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is playing on shuffle. Oh, it hurts my soul. You play on shuffle. Here's the thing. The songs are meant to transition between each other, right? The album is just one big song. Obviously, there's, like, highlights you can put into there, right? I do like mixing it up in my, like, workout playlist or whatever. But as a whole, if I'm listening to King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard as a choice, you have to listen to an album, specifically. You can't just pick and choose between the songs. But anyway, let's move on to Quarters. Even more concept album-y than before, because every single song in this playlist is 10 minutes and 10 seconds. So it totals out to 40 minutes and 40 seconds total. Which I think is pretty interesting. But the problem is that once you get past the first song, it kind of just deteriorates. But also, it's a nice little little dive into what we call polyrhythms. The first song's in 5-4. That means 5 beats within 4. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I've been taking Musen Theory. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, let's move on. It's a neat little listen to if you want to just chill out, have some background noise, but it's not an album you'd actually want to listen to, like, on its own. Unless you're tripping. This one I do like a lot, because I like the story. Paper Mache Dream Balloon. The main reason why they made King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard made this album is because Stu, the lead guitarist, vocalist, and a bunch of different accolades, wanted to practice his flute. He wanted to practice his flute, so he made an entire... They made an entire album. There are specific songs like Trapdoor and other songs at the end that specifically hone in on the flute, but the first song itself is just... beautiful. Because if you don't like the hard drumming with all that pots and pans nonsense, then the first song is perfectly for you. It's just a nice, smooth introduction to them. Let's give it a listen. Really mellows you out, doesn't it? That's some good sound right there. Like I said, they aren't all pots and pans, ladies and gentlemen. I do like the pots and pans, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's nice to just be sit back and relax. That's nice. Moving on to Nonagon Infinity. You go from 1 to 100 real fast with King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, and this is no different. Every single song on this, even if it's mixed kind of meh
It's kind of muddy in as kind of just like a brick of sound. It's still so catchy and so much fun. The songs themselves transition to each other so perfectly. Just check that one out. Do yourself a favor. And check this one out too. Here's the thing. In music, right? If you kind of dabble in music, you know that there's 12 notes within an octave, right? All those notes are specific frequencies that the air is affected by and travels into your eardrum and it perceives as sound, yada yada. Sciencey, boring nonsense. What's interesting about flying microtonal banana is that... Banana. Jeez, man. I cannot speak today. Alright. The interesting thing about flying microtonal banana, thank you, is the fact that they use, you guessed it, microtones. Notes in between notes, right? So say, for example, you have C, and then the note right on top of that is C sharp. What if there was a note in between that? What if there was a C half sharp? Oh, now we're cooking, ladies and gentlemen. And this is what they use, right? So for all you music nerds out there, the first song is a minor chord. It's a minor scale. It's played in a minor scale, right? The interesting thing about this, though, is that all the notes that make the minor scale, the third, the sixth, and the seventh, are flattened an extra half step. So they're now only half flat, if that makes sense. I don't understand it that much myself. You can look more into it if you do, but do listen to Flying Microtonal Banana, because the microtonal concept does come up a few more times within their discography. And as Microtonal Banana, we get 2017, right? This was their heyday as musicians, because they made 5 albums within the same year. They made 5 albums in the same year, each at least an hour long. Maybe not an hour long. Maybe even if they were 30 minutes, that's 2.5 hours, man. Can't do it. But I digress. We're going to go through all 5 albums, and we're going to go beyond that into what they're doing nowadays. And it's going to be a hoot. We're starting with Murder of the Universe. I love the story in this, because the thing is that the Murder of the Universe basically defined what the fans, the hired dying fans call, myself included, the Gizverse. Because in between the lyrics, you can faintly hear a coherent story being told between all the different albums. And how they connect is for theorists, like myself included, have to decide, right? Take, for example, Disc 2 in Murder of the Universe. They talk a lot about, there's a song called Lord of Lightning, and he fights the Balrog. And he explodes him with lightning, and then it leaves... That's the whole song. But the thing is that you can hear other different themes from different albums inside of the song. It blew my mind when I first heard it, because I was like, what? There's this song, and then there's the other song. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back to Nonagon Infinity. I'm going to play People Vultures. And then I'm going to head back into Murder of the Universe, and we'll hear it together. We'll hear the similarities together. Obviously, they take a bunch of other different samples and musical ideas from Paper Mache Dream Balloon and I'm In Your Mind Fuzz. But Nonagon Infinity and Murder of the Universe have the most close ties together. So let's listen to People Vultures, shall we? You can listen to the rest of that song. It kind of repeats after itself. But I think the main point of this episode is for me to be a kind of tour guide through the Gizverse, as it's so dubbed. Because, let's face it, no one likes deciphering lyrics. In myself included. I go to Guinness for all my stuff. For all my lyrical needs, right? So let me explain to you the third disc. Because there is a recurring cast of characters, believe it or not, within the albums that they create. And did you hear that they transitioned into Gregorian chants? They went, that's crazy! Ladies and germs, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is probably one of the most creative bands out there. And the main thing is that they don't buckle towards corporate greed, because they donate most of their stuff to either making better music or to causes. They donate all their money to different things all the time, which I think is a very valiant thing. I love this band. Anyway, let's explain to you the third disc of Murder of the Universe, which ends on Murder of the Universe, because guess what? The universe gets murdered. By who? By a cyborg named Hentai Yumi, right? This cyborg lives in a world where everything's being consumed by computers, right? And he wants to be whole again. He yearns for two things in the song. He yearns to die. That's in the song. I hate to break it to you, but he's a cyborg, so it's not suicide. It's just turning. It's booting himself down. But I digress. He wants to reach enlightenment and then finally give up the ghost, as it were. So he builds a soy protein munt machine. a machine made out of soy protein, which, so it's throwing up everyone, because that's actually the second thing that he wants to do first. He wants to throw up. He wants to feel sick. He wants to be able to brow fall over the ground. And so, with his invention, like Frankenstein's monster, betrays him and wants to do its own thing. And Hentai Yumi's like, no. And takes over his creation. He embeds himself in the creation and he starts spewing out vomit throughout the entire universe. Thus destroying galaxies and the concept of time. As the entire universe is destroyed and all that's left is him and his consciousness. That is the basic plot of Murder of the Universe. It doesn't get crazier than that, thank goodness. Unless you're talking about I never remember the name of this album. Petro-Draconic Apocalypse, or Dawn of the Eternal Night, and Annihilation of Planet Earth and the Beginning of a Merciless Damnation. Unless you're talking about that album, it doesn't get crazier than that. But moving on. Third song of 2017, Sketches of New Brunswick East. It was a album that was in part created with Mild High Club. I have no clue who the Mild High Club are, but I'm assuming they're kind of a laid-back, lounge, kind of jazzy feel. If you're into that sort of thing, of course. The lore behind this one, though, is as absurd, because some people believe that it's a direct jumping-off point from Murder of the Universe. How could it be a jumping off point, you may ask? Because he murdered the universe. There is no universe left. The cyborg is now an omnipotent being who created another universe that included the city of Brunswick East. And the only proof of this is in the song Tezida, which is a different language word for remember, I think it is. Or nostalgia, because that's the other lyric in the song. Remember, because I feel like a madman right now. I feel like Charlie Day in that one meme where he's just in his little room and he has the cacophony of different, he has the murder board up and he's just pointing at it like a madman. His eyes are wild and he's lost his mind a long time ago. But let me try to explain this to you, right? Let me at least give it a shot. Tezida has a little dialogue in between each of the choruses that includes a random citizen, assumedly, and Hentai Yumi, which is obvious because he's voiced in text-to-speech font, British text-to-speech font, which is beautiful to me, personally. Which is the only proof out of the entire album
And it's also the only album that actually has includes a song that is in a microtonal key. Take that as you will, because I do not. I'm not going into it again. Moving on. Polygon to Wonderland. This is the song I was talking about that was theoretically public domain. Now, editor,
could you look it up, please? Maybe go to your like higher-ups, maybe, because that would be nice. Maybe I'm going to play it at the end, and maybe people can actually listen to it on the recording for once. Editor!
I have my little bell, and I'm dingling. Anyway. This also, believe it or not, comes into play with the whole theory. Because Gone to Wonderland was a theoretical land that was of, I don't know how to explain it. I wrote an entire essay on this in English class in grade 12, but I do not remember what Gone to Wonderland means. I'm pretty sure it was a prehistorical island that included. It was kind of like what was the other island? It's a supercontinent where all the continents were like formed together, but it's Polygon to Wonderland, which means it's like a theoretical. It's in between worlds. It's not an actual like theoretical thing. I'm as confused as you are. Don't worry about it. I just like the music, and I like talking about this, because it's absurd, and I like absurdity. But the last three songs talk about the fourth color. And people do theorize, because on the album, Anti-Yumi comes back, and he says hello. Which is the only thing they have to go off of. And they still believe it in their heart of hearts. They're like, oh yeah, Anti-Yumi wanted to become an omnipotent being before he became a cyborg by getting the fourth color and ascending. But he like, went crazy with the power and he started killing people. I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't explain that one. You'll have to figure that one yourself. Go to, like, Genius or something. Or just ask Stu McKenzie. Whichever one you want to do. Gumboot Soup. That was the last 2017 song. And also another one of those kind of flavorful mix it up songs that are just the sausage endings of songs that that didn't make the cut in any other album. Don't really like them either, but there are some good ones. I like The Great Chain of Being. It's like a nice hard like rock metal kind of thing. It's the first one of their kind in that specific genre. But moving on, obviously, 2018, there's nothing, because they've already exhausted everything. They've produced five songs, five albums. I think they deserve a little break, if you ask me. But anyway, moving on to 2019, and Fishing for Fishies. I like this album, because it's not even, it's pre-rock. It's boogie-woogie, like, on the dance floor, like, the 12-bar beat kind of thing. I love it. I do like the first song, and in the contrast with the last song, because I feel like the album itself, Fishing for Fishies, kind of progresses between just, like, acoustic kind of feeling to, like, a completely, like, synthesized, like, robotic feeling. Because, again, Anti-Human comes back. He's literally on our album art. He's so cute, though. He's got his little overalls on. He's fishing for fishies as the lake starts burning around him. But anyway, Cyboogie is the only song that references him, so don't worry about it. There's only, like, little twiddly bits. I feel like after Murder of the Universe, they kind of just subsided with all the references. Here's the thing. Stu McKenzie and the other people, other folks on King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard specifically say that they don't really follow a plot, right? So it feels kind of dumb to connect all these things together, but I do believe that they have recurring themes. I do believe that. And whether or not they actually mean a plot to them, I do like the idea of a Gizverse. It's a very fun thing to me. And I think the main selling point of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizards is that they're just the boys having fun. They just like jam out for like 12 hours and they come out with an album. They're just fun guys. They're just really good at their craft. They constantly expand, unlike other pop artists. And also, they just... They have such a broad landscape of songs that you can just pick and choose from. It's beautiful. Anyway, I'm gonna play Fishing for Fishies, because I just like this song. And I think people need a break from all the prog hard metal. So let's give it a little listen. It's just that, like, kind of, like, bluegrass kind of feel to it. It's nice. I like it. Normally, I don't really like the kind of, like, hick genres, but I feel like that one does it pretty well. Moving on! Right back into the hardest rock ever. Infest the Rat's Nest. The other 2019 song. The 2019 album, sorry. This one, oh yeah. I'm not gonna play it, because there's probably a good amount of swearing within this, so I'm just gonna leave it to you guys to look it up. But I do love this album. They specifically talk about influences from Slayer and I think Megadeth, but the double bass drum kicks are on point. It was only the three of them, because I think this was the secondary album, and they kind of got burnt out. So I think it was only like three of them who were actually on this specific album. But even still, Stu McKenzie and all the others, they just have the voice for any job. Jack of all trades, honestly. You listen to Planet B, and I'm like, oh yeah. And then you get to like the last song, Hell, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know? Like, it just, it's a perfect workout song. You have the nice little, the brute force intro, and you have a nice mellow, like, in between part, and then it goes right back into it, and the key change as well. It's mwah, mwah, beautiful. Beautiful. Sorry, it was the nerd convention they called you. Alright, next up. We got two albums, each in 2020 and 2021. I'm going to pair them together because they're the title of the actual band itself. KG and LW are both microtonal albums. I'm not going to go too in-depth into them because I don't really like them that much. They're all right. I do like Hungry Wolf of Fate on King KG, and I do really enjoy a few of the songs. I do like a Supreme Ascendancy and the last title song in LW. But I don't know. I just feel like I kind of, like, you get the idea pretty quickly. And also the microtones are a bit iffy on those albums. They do it pretty well in certain sections, but other parts, they kind of just shoehorn it in. Those are probably, like, the lowest tier. They're still all right. I still like to hear them time to time. But, like, as, like, an actual listening thing, nah. Leave it to Beaver. I'm done with that. Butterfly 3000. Ooh, I like this one a lot. It was hard to warm up because, like, back in last year, actually, I was like, oh, yeah, I like rock! And all that kind of stuff. I was really into heavy metal. And I did not give this album the time of day, because it was all cutesy with its little, like, Geometry Dash, like, synthesizers and electronic beats. And I was like, meh, don't really feel it. But then I slept to this album. It was the best sleep I've ever had. It was beautiful. I slept like a baby. I normally have a hard time falling asleep. This one just lulls you to sleep. It's beautiful. And it's so cute, too, because it was literally written for one of the bandmates' child who was just birthed that year, which I think is just adorable. Yours, I think, is the specific song that was written for their child, which it tugs on the heartstrings, man. Let's move on. Omenum Gatherum is another one of these, like, splicing things, but I think it actually has some cadence with, like, what it's trying to do, because They don't just like finish the song. They extend the song. The Dripping Tap, especially, was the longest song they had for a while. A whopping 18 minutes, baby! The Dripping Tap is a very fun one, actually. I was surprised how it actually, like, was able to grip me as much as it did. Perfect for background noise, and also perfect when you just, like, want to get into it, and then you just, like, immediately, oh, I'm into it now. You know, it's a perfect lubricant into feeling King Giz. And also, the ending also, for some reason, transfers into two LPs that they made. The one called Made in Timeland, which was supposedly something related to Polygon to Wonderland, but I didn't look into that, because at some point, I just kind of stopped caring about the Gizverse. It was cool in 2017, but not now. I'm done with it, I'm sorry. And then Laminated Demon also transfers off of Made in Timeland, because it's an anagram, I think, of Made in Timeland. Two very fun prog albums, I do, I have to admit, but like, man, they're hard to explain to people. You know me. You feel me. This is so hard to explain to you. I'm sorry. This has been 30 minutes of nonsense to you. But we're almost through, so don't worry about it. Changes. The interesting about this one is that, oh, I almost forgot. Ice, Death, Planets, Lungs, Mushrooms, and Lava are all the E, what's the word for it? Whatever. The first letter of each word references to a musical mode that's used in each of the songs, which is really cool. But for non-music nerds, this is going to be another prog album, so take that as you will. Changes. Also very fun. They were kind of made, they made a limitation on themselves where they can only use the same chord progression for each of the songs, but they modify it pretty well. I'm actually surprised about that. Each of the songs have their own little flavor. I feel like Nobody and Gandhi are kind of like interchangeable, and I don't really know that much about them, but Change and Exploding Suns, beautiful. I cried during Exploding Suns. That's how beautiful it was. Of course, we're running out of time, so we can't really go into these as much. Petrodranic Apocalypse, also extremely fun, very recent album. It's the first album that was released when I got into them. And it was released this year, actually, which is, it's just so good, because it's a spiritual successor to Infest the Rat's Nest. But they take it to the next level. The last one was like heavy grunge. This is thrash metal. Yeah. Listen to the highlights here, Motor Spirit, Gila Monster, Flamethrower. Beautiful. And last but not least, we're back. We're up to date, ladies and gentlemen. The Silver Cord. Now, this one is kind of controversial in among the gizzards, among the giz community. Because you have the original like album, right? Roughly about 30 minutes, give or take. Maybe 25. Then you have the extended mix on disc 2. Each song is longer than 10 minutes, and Thea, the extended mix, beats the Dripping Tap, which finally solidifies it as the longest King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard song. There's jokes so much about on the internet about how about how they just like love pumping out like 25-minute long songs. It's about to trip, man. Go with the flow, yeah. Anyway. I hope I didn't run my mouth too much, and I hope you had a little fun with it. I'm gonna see, maybe I can talk to the editor or whatever, but if Polygon to Wonderland is available, we might be able to get it on the recorded podcast segment for the website. So keep that in mind. We're gonna check it out. We're gonna try it. We're gonna try with the fourth color, and we're gonna see what happens. But I'll leave you guys to it. I'm assuming most of you guys have finished your midterm, so I can't say that anymore. But I'm gonna see you guys next week. Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen.